Hi, my name is John Light, and I've spent over 20 years working throughout all corners of the recruiting world. Our podcast, Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool, is a resource to help you stay afloat and get ahead of your competition.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool. I'm your host, John Light, president of Sabretooth Recruiting. And today, I feel kind of privileged, actually, to have the very accomplished and I think very pioneering co-founder and CEO of the company called Alfi, which has produced this very interesting application of AI called Reflect AI, Julian Guthrie. Julian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm looking forward to a dazzling conversation. How's that, sir? A little bit of pressure.
Oh, man, no pressure whatsoever. we'll just have to really paddle hard against the current in this one. But I think part of, though, what could make this a dazzling conversation is getting it started, learning a little bit about your history and background and what brought you through that background to where you are today with Alfi and really and truly Reflect AI. You know, since our first conversation, I've thought, I don't know how many use cases have bubbled up in my mind for this tech that you're developing. So I'd love to hear more about the journey that brought you to it, if that makes sense.
That's a great starting point. So I am a admitted word geek. I have spent my entire career thinking about language, communication, the words we use, how our communication can set us forward or how it can set us back, how it can help and how it can harm. As a child, I was obsessed with words, with, you know, being quizzed about words in the dictionary. I went on to become a journalist. For 20 years, I was at the San Francisco Chronicle. It was a fantastic, fantastic job. Absolutely loved it. I was a daily news reporter. I really thought of it as very much the fourth estate, where we are a watchdog for, you know, what potentially is going wrong and also celebrating what is going right and holding people accountable. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to think about going from that daily journalism. I went on to write 5 nonfiction books as well. But then to think about how our Reflect AI by Alfi is also a watchdog, but one that uses AI both to reduce harm from the damaging communication that people use, the discriminatory communication, the toxic communication, and how do we help companies mitigate the risk and reduce the risk of costly litigation? So my journey really is a continuum. It may seem very different in that I was a journalist, I was writing a bunch of books, and now I'm the founder of an AI company, but it's really focused still on the same thing I've always loved and been obsessed with and believe that there's transformative power in how we can communicate. We're all seeing a world where that, you know, it's increasingly polarized because of divisive communication where people are kind of, you know, not listening to one another and communication is in many ways worsening. So that's kind of from there to here and how it does feel not like a huge pivot, although being a CEO and founder is very, very challenging, but it's also a story of how do we use our passion and the skills we developed as a superpower? And then how do we keep opening doors with that same set of skills?
Okay. Well, you gave us a lot to dig into, as there's no doubt about it. You know, my entire life, I've loved the written word. You know, even today, even though you can't see what's on the other side of where my computer's sitting, I've got books, and more books, and it covers the gamut. Of course, here in the office, there's all sorts of history stuff. I even have my old intermediate accounting textbook from college. Man, that rascal still scares me. I don't like looking at it that much.
No, it sounds scary without seeing it.
Oh yeah. It took 2 semesters to go through it.
Well, behind me, I have books.
And I think books make the world go round, but now we've entered in this time period and technology where, well, I can Google this information or look on Bing or whatever it might be. And I wonder sometimes if we're getting disconnected from the understanding, the depth and the vibrance that is found in the use of words and books. Like I have not met, when I was young, I read a bunch of the works from Tennyson. I read some Plutarch. I read some other classical sort of things. And I can't help but think that communicating, I guess you could say, in a fashion was somehow modeled on what I read. You know, and I think there's this huge influence that now we're communicating things in these little statements, and it is very polarizing because that's all we have time to do. And we're losing, I think, a little bit of the art of actually listening and learning and understanding where our counterparty or this other person is coming from. And when we lose that understanding, we can't respond. We can't engage in a way that's more meaningful than having some divisiveness, than having some conflict involved.
Right. And you think about, you know, a lot of the AI tools today or just the more advanced technological tools around email compose and how we have smart compose and autocorrect and it finishes your sentences. And but that's not actually making us better communicators. And I wanted to build a solution with Reflect AI that really is gets you to reflect before you hit send just for that second. To think about the power of your words. We all have sent emails. We're like, oh my God, I shouldn't have sent that. Or I'm so surprised that the person, you know, thought I was angry or wish you were where you wish you could take it back. So what Reflect does is operates in real time to really get you to think about how you're communicating. Instead of correcting it for you, smart compose, you know, when when someone learns to do something on their own, they become much better at it than when something is done for that person. But it is true around communication. And now we have so many channels of communication. And how do we communicate differently on each channel? What's appropriate for different, you know, what's appropriate for business communication, whether you're a small, medium-sized business or an enterprise? You know, what about Slack? Slack feels very chat. It feels very almost social media, but it's actually, you know, used by companies. And there's a lot of harm that comes out of people being far too casual on some of these communication mediums. And it costs, you know, it only takes one for someone to write something that is racist, sexist, ageist, classist. And then it escalates, damages the individual, the team, the company, the brand. So it has this spiraling effect. And my love of language really was about bringing a tool to life that into the market that that helps individuals, that's user-friendly. It's not Big Brother. It's not spyware. It's there to be an always-on sort of coach reminder to be also very friendly. So, but you're on to something with, you know, communication and how it is. It represents how we communicate really represents all that we've learned and all of our interactions. And we know there's unequal access to learning and to a range of interactions. So again, I hope that this communication tool will be used in a very universal way that again brings people together. So it's really exciting for me where we are with the company and thinking about how you take you know, a passion for whatever it is that you do, whether it's maybe it's financial services, maybe it's accounting, whatever it is, and then keep opening, as I said, new doors for where you want to go. And I mean, if, when I started working as a journalist, I would have never thought I would become a, you know, founder and CEO of a tech startup. So it's a wild, wild journey, but I think, you know, it's inspiring. It's like, you know, I'm always in way over my head. I always try to surround myself with people who are far smarter than I am. And there's something for being in over your head, you know, and then reaching and figuring things out. And it's okay not to know everything and to say, I don't know, but I'm going to figure it out. So that's been a lot of my life for the last 3 years of running this company.
Well, and I'll tell you, the first time we spoke about Reflect AI, the first thing that popped in my head was Big Brother, and it was autocorrect. And all this other sort of stuff. But I can tell you, and for anyone listening, I'll attest to this. When you demoed it, it was so intriguing to me because rather than forcefully saying, no, don't do that, you're going to get in trouble. It, like you said, it kind of nudges you to think, pause and think. And it, funny enough,
it brought me back to my childhood and growing up, and I'm experiencing it now with two boys in middle school in that sixth, seventh grade range, you know, where they're trying to figure themselves out. They're trying to learn their limits. And I've got this one son who wants to be funny. He wants to, you know, have humor in what he does, and he hasn't figured humor out yet. Neither comedic timing or what actually funny is, right? And every now and then he hits it, but he tries too hard. But it's intriguing me to watch this because it took me back to when I was probably the same age, and my parents said, think before you speak. And we could easily transfer that into the world today and say, you know, give this some consideration before you hit send, or worse yet, accidentally hit reply all on something that you shouldn't have replied all on because it was insensitive or it was inconsiderate or it wasn't thoughtful or it was any of the other things that you mentioned. And I find it an interesting path. And this is kind of what, when we were talking previously about, well, you know, hey, we got to cut a podcast together, because I'm thinking you've taken an approach in it to where it's not an AI dictator sitting in your email, but rather
absolutely
an AI
not.
Enabler for communication, yes, but an enabler to get you to think. And I related it immediately to the old Kobe saying that seek first to understand, then to be understood. And what my parents said, like I mentioned earlier, and that's, I think it's pretty clever, actually, Julian.
I think that's
a very smart, strategic, forward-looking way to approach it versus it has to be this or it has to be that. But why don't you think about this first?
Well, we also know that behavioral change happens incrementally, assiduously, and it has to be something that is accessible, that is affirmative. You know, people don't want to be criticized or poked all the time. You know, criticize. Behavioral change doesn't happen that way. So we want to make sure that we are affirmative. We also know that, you know, there are $1.2 trillion spent by U.S. companies on litigation each year stemming from harmful, toxic, discriminatory communication. We know that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's just a massive number. This is a kind of a communication compliance solution that looks at communication, intercepts flags, alerts in real time before the milk has spilled, before the damage has occurred. We also know that people, there are differences in what people have been exposed to in life. So we check for all of the harmful, potentially harmful categories of, you know, ageism and racism and sexism and classism, how we speak to one another about, you know, derogatory things around class, as well as looking at unlawful, and that's EEOC protected classes. So discrimination in employment, nation of origin, anti-LGBTQ, et cetera. And then we just created a label that I'm super excited about that is around ethics. And how do you detect potential ethics breaches in digital communication? So we've just started developing that and have very successfully rolled that out and deployed it. And we integrate, by the way, as you saw, we integrate with Gmail. If you're a Gmail user or if you're an Outlook user, you know, these are solutions that anyone can download and use. And we're moving big into selling it to enterprise companies, but it's also great for small, medium-sized businesses, individuals who want to protect themselves and make sure they're you know, really engaging in meaningful communication.
I think it's prudent, especially for organizations, to take it on, but anybody's communicating with more than one other person, right? Because we live in a time where we're increasingly doing business with, the only time we've met is virtually.
Yes.
You know, we didn't grow up next to the person. They're not living down the street, but they are on the other side of a computer monitor, or they're on the other side of our mobile device. And I think it's important that we're careful with it. To your point, there's a cost associated with being sloppy or unkind or inconsiderate. And, you know, how much of that
there
is
it only
somebody,
takes one.
Yeah. And I mean, how much of that is on you as a communicator versus on how it's received on the other side of that communication? I think that loses a little bit of its relevancy when you start considering the process and the costs involved in the process that could result from it. But I'm curious to know, because you've been working on this now for how long? When did you kick
off
the
development
of Reflect? 2.5 years. Okay. 2.5 years ago, were people talking about AI? Yes. But were people talking about AI the way they're talking about it today?
No. Uh-huh. No.
Not even close.
No. We started this long before OpenAI made the big splash that it does. And we use an OpenAI large language model, but we've created all of our proprietary training around it. Mm-hmm. And, we were working on this. We have some trailblazers in AI who we've been working with and who have been working on something, you know, that one calls considerate computing at an AI scientist named Ted Selker, who really, you know, thought about how do we use technology to improve our lives. And again, considerate computing is just, to me, a really fascinating concept. And it's what we wanted to bring to, to Reflect, to our Reflect AI, how, you know, and as we think about kind of going back to the ethics breaches that companies have, you know, it gets mm-hmm. to the heart at the questions around life. And when you think about ethics, you know, what is my purpose? How do I want to live? How do I want to interact with others? What is my legacy? We think about all of those questions and how do you ask yourself those questions and how does it express itself in your daily communication? Because it's a part of it. It's a part of how we represent ourselves. It's a part, you know, it's one of the things that distinguish us from all other animals is our ability, our nuanced communication. And our communication can be magical. It can also be devastating. And mm-hmm. so we come at it looking at those big questions and then at the macro level and then also at the micro level, but always trying to be something, even as a compliance tool. Normally you think of compliance tools as, oh my God, they're monitoring me. They're coming after me. It's only harsh and severe.
Looking over my shoulder.
Yes. And, you know, while our solution provides detection for companies, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's also intended simultaneously to be very helpful for the individual. That was really important to us. That is really important to us.
Well, and frankly, I appreciate that aspect of it, that it's not just a tool that only has application in one sector. Because, you know, you look around, there are so many tools right now available to do so many different things out in the world, in the business world, wherever, that, you know, you could probably catalog them and find so many redundancies and overlaps, but not enough that does something specific that relates maybe to the whole column of a sector, the whole space of a sector. And when you talk about communication, if there's one tie that binds everything we do in business and in anything, it is communication. And I think it's a road that has a lot of train wrecks on it because there's a lot of traffic on it.
That's a good, a very good way to put it. Well, and it affects, you know, it's how do you represent yourself? How do you show up? Mm-hmm. How do you show up for a meeting? If you're a student, if you're, you know, a middle school student, I have a high school student, you know, how do you present yourself in, in a class with your friends, introductions, college applications, job interviews? It's all about communication and, what is it that you're communicating? But thinking about those questions, you know, that are at the heart of what we're doing also, you know, what is ethical communication? And ethical communication is meaningful communication. Meaningful communication gives you a competitive advantage. So this is not mm-hmm. a soft skill. This is a fundamental skill.
Actually, okay. That's a great point.
Oh, good,
I'd like for you to expand on this a little bit because statistically, about 82% of all failed hires, the number one reason that people list are soft skills. Now, they're referring really to personality and personality alignment with culture, I think, more than anything. But communication's a piece of that. And I think as a person moves up executive ranks and in certain professions, if you're in the legal field, for example, your ability to communicate has to evolve and grow and get sharp with you. And that's why you tend to find a lot of communication professionals, a lot of, say, Fortune 500 C-suite executives, for example, they communicate in a very similar way. But when you go south of that level, you find a lot of variance. And I've always struggled because I've always put communication in the soft skill space because you can't quantify. Hey, we need somebody who's a great communicator. What the heck does that mean? How do you define great? Or a strong relationship builder? Well, how do you define or quantify strong? If I can't measure it, it's just a moving subjective target. And so I'm wondering if you have any insights that you could expand on about that, because I think it's very valid. And I think that the ability to communicate is a hard skill. It is something you have to learn. You have to grow. It has to be deliberate. It has to be intentional that I'm going to expand my vocabulary. I'm going to use grammatically correct sentences. I'm going to speak after I've had a chance to really understand what the other person is trying to get across, so I address things and become an effective communicator. Maybe not an efficient one. Maybe not a fantastic orator. Oh, man. I don't know why Oreo cookies popped in my head just then, but there you go.
Is it Oreo cookie break time?
If I had them in the house.
Yes. Well, there's so much to that. You know, there's so much to communication. And, you know, what part of it is like, what is the type of communication? What should you be thinking about with communication that is helpful to you? And what are the qualities? So you want to have it at work and with others, you know, going back to the heart of ethics is respect, respecting the dignity inherent in others. And so in your communication, respect is a component of meaningful communication. You are showing respect. That doesn't mean you're necessarily deferential, but respectful. And you can always remain respectful. That also speaks to the tone, something that gets lost all too often in written communication in particular. Yes. Where the tone is misunderstood. So being respectful in your communication. I think empathy is another thing that is a part of effective communication, whether it's interpersonal, whether it's professional. But if you have a colleague who has lost his beloved, you know, 15-year-old dog, and you don't say anything, and you know all about it, and, you know, wouldn't it be better just to say, hey, Dan, I'm so sorry for the loss of your dog. I hope you're okay. And then you can move right into the meeting. But showing that empathy, it also shows respect, kind of working hand in hand. Confidence at least is something also we check for. I'm sorry, what?
I said at least acknowledgement, you know, that I recognize you've had a traumatic event as a human being, you know, part of life experience, whatever it might be.
And it connects us. So if you're a salesperson, think about what salespeople try to do, and not in a transactional way. I mean, it's with salespeople it is, but outside of that, where even, you know, the best salespeople make meaningful human connections and you like the person, you trust the person, they have something that will benefit you, that will be value added for your life, for your work, whatever it is. So you establish a relationship there. So, I mean, I think you don't want to think about people as the means to the end, but, in a transactional way. But to develop meaningful communication with someone, again, whether it's with your loved one, your husband, your wife, your partner, whatever it is, similar, the same qualities, empathy, respect, think about the tone, you know, are you coming across as angry? I received an email recently and it was in all caps, the first two sentences, all capital letters. And so that very much comes across as super angry. And we don't check grammar or punctuation, but we do look at tone. And so that's maybe, so you can think about those little things that add up to something significant. Then there's the harm side, you know, and again, a lot of people are just unaware that maybe you shouldn't say, you know, we're only going to hire digital natives at this point, because that's ageist, that's discriminatory ageism, because it's referring to 20 somethings, young, typically younger generation workers. And that's discriminatory by EEOC protected classes. So it could actually land you in a lot of hot water. Or if you're like, oh, I don't think we should hire her. She's like 32. I'm sure she's going to have another baby. You'd be amazed at what people actually write. That's also EEOC protected classes.
Listen, I've run across that both of those in 20 plus years in the recruiting world. Then I remember one in very particular where the candidate was actually asking me, hey, are you sure they're even going to be interested in me? I'm 7.5 months along.
And oh, wow.
Funny story. Not only did they not care, you know, that she was pregnant, they wanted her on the team. But, and I knew she was close when we got to end of the interview process. Funny story. I call her to roll out a verbal offer and she answers the phone and says, oh, hi, John, how are you? I said, great. Hey, I've got some pretty good news for you. You know, XYZ company wants to make an offer and they've given me the numbers. I want to share that with you. She goes, can you hold just a moment? I said, sure. And I hear this really loud, long groan, this moan coming out and I hear voices. She picks a phone up. Okay. You know, a minute or three later or whatever and says, so how does it look? And I said, wait a second. Where are you?
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm in labor and delivery. I'm like, why didn't you answer the phone?
Ended up placing her. I know, too, like hard charging, you know, women who is similar stories where they're like having meetings and the you know, OBGYN has to take away the phone because baby time, mm-hmm. like it's delivery time.
Yeah.
There's so much, you know, I don't think most people are intentionally bad actors or intending to discriminate against or, you know, but sometimes people think certain jokes are really funny and they're not. And here's a reminder that this is kind of inappropriate. And then there's the elevated, you know, just don't write these things that are where you're going to get a flag. But you're going to be reminded. Maybe you're typing in, oh, we, you know, we don't want any more whatever the group by ethnicity, you know, we don't want any more, they're taking over the world, whatever. Just you can't write these things because it's going to get you in hot water. You know, part of ethics is the question of, you know, do people operate out of self-interest? Is that it? What is it about ethics, being ethical, that will motivate people? Mm-hmm. You know, why do people want to be ethical?
Well, I mean, in the long term, it should be beneficial to you, and it's actually in your own perceived best self-interest. And that's the key that a lot of people miss in communication. It's not necessarily about your best self-interest or someone else's best self-interest. It's what you perceive is in your own best self-interest. If you perceive a short-term gain because I put someone else down or I elevated someone else with false flattery, that's not really in the your life's best interest, but you perceive it that way. Because those things can both turn around and bite you on the hiney later. It is a different sort of thing because you have the flip side of that as well. You know, some company cultures promote competition and conflict, especially sales cultures. You know, and of course, I can't speak for you because I'm the person you were just describing. Like, we want somebody who's a digital native. You know, we still had party lines when I was growing up. And I remember when fax machines replace couriers and delivery people to send resumes. And, you know, I kind of sit back and look at it from the perspective of we need to be cautious too. If somebody said, well, hey, you're not a digital native, you know, well, as long as you give me a chance to dive in with you, I'll be happy to knock you on your backside metaphorically with how digitally oriented I can be. You know, yes. I can over digitize if you need me to. But we need to also be in the mindset as a recipient of communication that we stop and consider where it's coming from and why. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've gotten an email or a voicemail or a phone call from someone, and it was like, all right, this person's mad, and I'm not sure why. Or they're angry, and it turns out something's happened in their life. They've had a rough day, or maybe they just never learned how to communicate. And I think we need to... have everything in a spirit of where we can be competitive and we can have, say, competing ideas and thoughts. But, you know, it needs more than one push of a button for us to be angry at one another. And that's why I like the whole concept that you put forward about we're not forcing you to change this, but we're telling you need to think about it. because I think that, whether you're the sender or the recipient of a communication nowadays, I think that's the big missing piece of the puzzle, is how much effort do we put into actually understanding before we hit send or before we reply?
Well, communication.
It's not easy.
Right. Communication is, those are great points, you know, a key part of talent. And it is one of the necessary qualities, qualifications, things to aspire to be a better communicator. How does one become a good communicator? We started out this conversation by talking about books. Well, it doesn't have to, you know, it can be audible, it can be podcasts, it can be, you know, certain videos on social media. It's interesting, you know, you can look at TikTok and you look at what's being communicated for better or for worse. The more stories that we listen to with an open mind and mm-hmm. really genuinely listen to and listen to one another, the better we will communicate, because it kind of goes back to empathy and it goes back to respect. And my career as a journalist was so amazing. One of the things it taught me was there are always at least two sides to the story. And, you know, listen to both sides and don't be judgmental about people. You never know what people are going through. Listen to people, right. Get exposure to people from all walks of life. And all of this is, you know, is really informs and infuses what we do with our Reflect AI. If, you know, we're a compliance solution for companies looking at, you know, harmful communication, but we also know that there's that. If you can have a great technology, which we have, I think it's transformative. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it on the market. But if you don't have that buy-in, that self-interest, I mean, I say that in a positive way. If you don't have that buy-in mm-hmm. from the employees, they're going to resist and revolt against whatever that technology is. I don't want to use it. It's, you know, tell it Big Brother, whatever it is. So you have to have a buy-in in terms of not just with the technology, but what are the communication kind of parameters of the company? Mm-hmm. And that comes from, you know, leadership, the culture, and how that alone is communicated. You know, what the values are, what the code of conduct is, and how does communication, again, play a part in that code of conduct? And that's what we've wrapped this AI system around, is we're trying to analyze literally trillions of human utterances and categorize them and let you know how this is coming across, you know, whether it's angry or profane or potentially unlawful, or you're getting into a potential, you know, ethics breach. We want to let you know about all of that, but it's a very ambitious mm-hmm. Technology and undertaking, for sure.
But you know what I'm hearing? You know what I'm hearing from you, Jillian? That in order to produce a better AI platform, a better AI tool or product, we ought to first spend some time being a better human.
Yes. And AI can actually make us better too. It doesn't have to replace us. It doesn't have to take time away. It's something that can really augment great capabilities that we already have and key challenges that we face every day. And there are little things. It's not, no one's asking anyone to be the perfect, masterful communicator. These are little things that add up to talent, to success, and are really cornerstone of when you talk about talent, qualifications, connecting with people.
The human in the loop is a real thing. But beyond that, I believe I'm not looking forward to any encounters with our robot overlords that, you know, they melt eyebrows or something, but I am looking forward to the opportunity to be more of what I am, to be more, to be more human, to do more human things, more human interaction. Speaking of which,
yes,
I want to know, I think I could guess, but I'm afraid to guess because it's being recorded and I can't take it back. So I'm going to count you to tell me. And if I start smiling broadly and laughing, you'll know that that's what I guess.
Okay.
But tell us something about you, Jillian, like a passion project, where you like to focus your brain power and your time. It could be work. It could be something personal. It could be something charitable. I don't know. But I've heard so many different answers from guests since we started this podcast. I ask everyone, and so I'm asking you,
what's your passion project?
Right now, it's pretty much, well, besides my family and my dog, who you may have heard, I hope not, but scratching, whining at the door to get in, and cooking and friends and all the things that make up our life. I am very, very focused on building this company and getting it out to the world. So I don't look at it as like this. There's this demarcation between my personal and my professional life. I'm blessed in that I've always loved, loved, loved the work that I'm doing. Not that every day is blissful, but it is a blessing to be able to spend time thinking about how we can become better communicators and how we can tell stories. What are the stories we tell ourselves that, you know, again, set us back? If I'm constantly saying, oh, I'm terrible at math, or oh, I'm too old for this, or oh, I'm too young for this, you know, that is something also. So I'm thinking a lot about, as I've mentioned, ethics probably 200 times in this conversation, thinking a lot about ethics, moral philosophy, and how do we connect that in a really seamless way with technology? Like, how exciting is that? Remember, we were trying to dazzle. That, to me, is dazzling.
I was pretty close, by the way. I was pretty close. I was going to say Reflect AI, Alfie, but I was going to weave in there about the passion project is the passion of language, of communication. Yes. You know, because you're clearly doing something you love. And when you do what you love, you're not working a day in your life, as the expression goes.
Right. I do get a little bit obsessive about some side projects. Like, you know, how do I make the very best soup? It's freezing where I am. So it's, you know, it's constant. Or how do I do the perfect push-up? Or, you know, I kind of get myopically focused on a few of these little side things.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'll leave you with this parting thought. So my wife keeps a pretty robust garden. And right before things get chilly, you know, late fall, winter time for us here, everything that's left in the garden gets brought in, gets roasted, and turned into this massive vegetable soup.
Oh, wow.
And
yum.
It is yum. But you never know exactly what the flavor profile is going to be. It's kind of tomato-y because we have a lot of those, but there's all this other stuff she adds in there. And it's remarkable and fun and adventurous. And it gets gobbled up. So
I like that. What are all the ingredients? That's what we've been talking about. You know, what are the ingredients of life, of communication, of soup? And, you know, and then appreciating the unexpected, because you can, you know, you can only plan so much. And so appreciating where this takes you, where a conversation takes you, where listening to others will take you, where, you know, finding incremental ways to improve your communication every day. I mean, that can take you really far. So yeah, I love the your soup story that kind of fed off of my soup story.
It just shows that we're listening. And that's where a good relationship starts.
Yes.
That's where a good interaction starts.
Yes.
And Julian Guthrie, founder, co-founder, CEO, Alfie with a Reflect AI product. If you haven't checked it out, you need to check it out, because you can go get it in any app store, right?
And you can get it through for Gmail and the Google Workspace Marketplace, or you can get it if you use Outlook in Outlook. You can go to our website, www.alphyco.com. That's alphyco.com. And you can email me, julian@alphyco.com. How about that?
I'll do it.
Okay. I think you already have.
Other people better do it too.
But please do again. It was so much
Julian,
fun the first
thanks
time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk again soon. Guaranteed.
Look forward to it. Be well.
You've been listening to Drowning in the Tech Talent Pool. This podcast is sponsored by Sabretooth. Sabretooth improves the quality of hire and speeds up the time to fill specialized machine learning, data engineering, data science, and developer roles, stretching tech recruiting budgets further by bringing the precision of retained search and the speed of contingent search to the market in one complete solution. Find out more at sbr2th.com and follow me, John Light, on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.